The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt
Boone Media Productions. From the territories to the Attitude Era, if you grew up on wrestling, you need to check out TerritoryWrestlingTees.com. They have pro wrestling inspired tees for indie wrestlers and their fans. Right now, you can save 20% on their best-selling Raised on Wrestling tee with the promo code YITENDED. Hey, Robbie, have you checked out TerritoryWrestlingTees.com?
Of course I have. And, bro, honestly, not only are the shirts super, super cool, but the people that run it are just great people, and they're something that you definitely want to look into. Check out these shirts, bro.
So go ahead and support our sponsors for this episode of Why It Ended. TerritoryWrestlingTees.com. Save that 20% at TerritoryWrestlingTees.com.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey, what's going on, guys? And welcome to another edition of Why It Ended with myself and Matt Coon. Today is a very special episode because it is with probably the tallest human that I've ever met in my life, Matt Morgan. And Matt Coon, how do you feel about having another Matt invade our show today?
I'm not sure how I feel about having someone taller than me and with the same name, but I do know I am sure of something, Robbie. We changed the world. And we change lives.
We're changing the world, and we're changing lives every week, man. And I'd say it's because of me more than you.
You know, everybody knows that you're the person that changes lives. But let me tell you what else is going on. If by now, I hope you've listened to our bonus episode with Cherry, our lost pilot, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback about that. It's good to get that episode on the air, and it's awesome that we reached our threshold of YouTube subscribers. And don't forget, if you want to hear that episode, it's available exclusively right now at whereitended.com. That's our YouTube channel, and you should check it out. But if you're not really comfortable with YouTube, it will be on our regular podcast platforms very soon. Right, Robbie?
Yeah, and it's funny listening back to it because for those that don't know, you know, if you did listen to it, that was actually the first ever episode of anything that, you know, we never had practice or anything that me and Matt ever recorded together. And, you know, to hear us then and then hear us now, we've come such a long way. I mean, you've already were working with some podcasts. Podcasting is new to me. So it's just funny to go back and listen. But I still think it's a great interview. Cherry's a close friend of mine and a great girl, and she gave some great information on OVW and WWE. So if you haven't listened to it yet, definitely check it out.
And of course, if you want to connect with us, you connect with us at Why It Ended on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, coming up, we have Matt Morgan. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. What do you think Matt's going to talk about, Robbie?
Well, first and foremost, beyond what he's going to talk about is WWE career, TNA. I want to know, with our new pro wrestling tee store, do you think they make a shirt big enough, a wide-ended shirt big enough to fit Matt Morgan?
I have it on good authority that it's tough for tall people to get shirts, but I make the tall shirts work, and I'm a pretty tall guy. And did you say we have a pro wrestling tee store, Robbie?
Yeah, that was my way of giving you a little cheap plug. You see what I did there? You see how lucky you are that I'm your co-host with you, buddy?
Hallelujah. ProWrestlingTees.com/WhiteEnded is finally open. We have two shirts up right now. We have Pod Runs Cold in tribute to Glacier, of course, and we have the smooth, silky, chocolatey voice shirt, of course, attributed to me. But we've got a great Muhammad Hassan shirt going up. I believe we'll probably have a shirt that says We Change Lives. And we're really excited about all that, aren't we, Robbie?
Yeah, and every week there'll be new ones added. And then, of course, we'll have the, you know, just a normal one that just says Why It Ended with our design on it, which will be pretty cool. And, yeah, guys, please get the shirts. Post pictures in them on Twitter or Instagram. We'll definitely give you a retweet. We'll give you a follow. Just keep helping spread the word. And make sure to our podcast, you are subscribing, you are leaving reviews and ratings, and just keep spreading the words. I think all we have left to do, Matt, which I know we'll be doing in the next few weeks, is a Facebook page.
Facebook page has got to come, and I'll tell you what else is coming, is the 6'11" and 3/4" blueprint of wrestling Matt Morgan. He's going to talk about TNA, WWE, WWF, and a guy who actually just walked away. Is that a crazy thought to you?
Yeah. Well, I just kind of want to hear his side of the story.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, but you're going to hear it right after this on Why It Ended. Why It Ended with Robbie E, sponsored by you. Yeah, you. You or your company can sponsor Why It Ended, and your product or service can be heard about by thousands, tens of thousands of wrestling fans every week on wrestling's hottest new podcast. Or we can just produce a 30-second or 60-second commercial for you. Sponsor or get a commercial on Why It Ended today. Just email me, Matt Coon, at whyitendedmail@gmail.com. That's whyitendedmail@gmail.com. Let your audience know who you are and let us help. And now we are joined by, a lot of people think, one of the great big men in the history of wrestling, the Blueprint, Matt Morgan. How's it going, Matt?
That's a hell of an intro, but I'll take it. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Hey, I'm doing good, bro. And just so you know, I gave him $20 to put you over like that in that intro. I'm just throwing that out there.
Somebody did. Thank you.
Hey, well, now let me just say, I think I'm a super busy guy. And after trying to connect with you the past few days, I got to honestly say, you might be the busiest human that I've ever met.
I don't know. Like, I always say, like, okay, this is too much. This is too much. I got to relax a little. And then I add something else into this of what I do every day. And it's, I do it to myself, but in the same token, Robbie, if I'm not busy, dude, I freak out, I get uncomfortable, I get antsy. It's really, really weird, and it's only getting worse as I get older. I should be relaxing more, but it's
I'm the same way. I freak out if I'm doing nothing. But on top of everything you're doing, that's also an addition to being a father and being a husband. So you got a million things going on.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, obviously, towards the end of the podcast, we will find out why certain things in wrestling ended, but we want to know why it began. So how did you originally fall in love with pro wrestling?
I remember like yesterday, sitting Indian style. Oh, we can't say that anymore.
Crisscross applesauce.
Crisscross applesauce on my living room floor with my family. Because back in the early 80s, everybody watched wrestling together in your household, right? And it was a Saturday morning. So this is how much I remember this. And Andre the Giant was tag teaming with SD Special Delivery Jones against King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. Well, I should have known that Andre picked himself one crappy ass partner. But back then, you don't know the guys who are going to be doing the jobs and who are not. At least I didn't as a little kid. I was like six. Long story short, SD Jones gets shit-canned over the top rope. Big John Studd and I take that back. And Ken Patera beat the living hell out of Andre the Giant.
I remember it like it was yesterday, Matt.
Yeah, and they shave his head, or they trim his hair, rather. They start cutting his hair with scissors and whatever. And SD Jones is just sitting out there just from being thrown over the top rope for like 20 minutes. And I'm screaming at my dad, like, what's he doing? What's he doing? Get up. And that moment, I was in tears for Andre the Giant. Like, that was my guy at first. Before Hogan, it was Andre. And I remember crying about it, you know? And that was my, looking back, that's the first time, like, I got emotionally invested into professional wrestling. You know, as they say, me and my brother were sitting there in tears. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, that whole day, we couldn't believe it. Andre was undefeated. Nobody did this to him, you know? And the whole time, we just kept, like, bad mouthing SD Special Delivery.
Man, you hate that guy.
I couldn't stand him because of this.
How old were you at this time?
I want to say 6 or 7.
And how tall were you?
Oh, Lord. An inch shorter than Andre? No. in school and stuff, I can remember being 6'3" in 8th grade.
Oh, my God.
6'6" as a high school sophomore. 6'9" as a junior. No, so sorry, I take that back. 6'10" as a junior.
Wow.
And then 6'11" as a senior. And I always thought I was like 6'10", 6'11". And then, later on in life, when I filmed American Gladiators, is the next time I got my height taken. And I was somehow 6'11 and a half. So there you go.
Wow. So we get the news on how tall Matt Morgan actually was. Because that's a question I was going to ask. As a big guy, you must have really found a lot of empathy for Andre the Giant, maybe some role model. And then Hulk Hogan comes along. You were a big Hulkamaniac?
Who wasn't? Oh, Lord, yeah.
I wasn't. I was an Ultimate Warrior, bro.
Okay. See, okay, I will admit this. Ultimate Warrior did have me. I was able to watch him on his debut back. You lived in the Northeast, Robbie, right?
Yeah. So, like, yeah, Jersey.
We got MSG. We got the MSG channel. So we got to see Warrior when he came on out and answered Honky Tonk's gimmick and, you know, beat him for the Intercontinental title out of nowhere, right? So I saw that. I got bit by that bug too. But I had to make a choice, and I was picking Hogan going into, the Sky Dome.
WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
So a lot of people know you and from Tough Enough, when you were the big mobile guy on Tough Enough who got hurt and still got a chance. Did you have any wrestling training before Tough Enough?
Do you guys have time? I mean, do I have time to get into?
Of
like,
course, sure.
Sorry.
Like, the grittier the story, the better for us. You know?
This is a cool story. It's all right. I drove by. I lived in Fairfield, Connecticut, two towns from Stamford, where the Titan Towers headquarters were. So I would drive past that. I graduated college, and I was working for Enterprise Rent-A-Car in Stamford, Connecticut. So I would drive from Fairfield to Stamford every morning and every night on the way home. I'd pass the Titan Towers. And I'm not exaggerating. I would sit there, and I would literally pray if I'm in traffic or whatever, and I'm like, Lord, please, one of these days, I really want to be a WWE wrestler. Make this happen. What do I have to do? That kind of thing. And I know that sounds lunatic, like crazy, but I really did do that. And then I just kept constantly doing that for like about 3 months. I was also bouncing on the weekends in Fairfield, Connecticut at a bar. Kid from WWE Raw magazine, I believe it was, came into the bar one night and did the whole, oh my God, you should be a WWE wrestler. What are you doing here? Kind of a thing. I'm like, well, how do you start? Like, is it back then? I didn't know of camps or, you know, anything like that. I had no clue. And he invited me to come work out on Friday nights at Titan Tower headquarters, at WWE headquarters in Stamford. And that's supposedly when Vince McMahon would be in there, sometime between, you know, 6 and 10 p.m. or some crap like that.
Wait a minute, work out in, like, the gym?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we talked. We both were huge fans. And he, you know, he saw that I had physically the potential kind of a thing, you know, the look at least. And so, I did this every Friday night. I went to the gym. And we would spend like 2 to 3 hours in there hoping we'd bump into Vince McMahon. And that was our route that we were going to take with this, right? And 6 months later, I eventually did bump into Vince McMahon. He's walking out of the locker room in the gym area right when I was walking in. And I had my work clothes on, like my shirt and tie and stuff like that from Enterprise. You know, he just bumped right into my chest, looked up at me. He's like, holy bleep. And he's like, how tall are you, son? And I was like, you know, I'm at the time I was like 6'10". Just wanted to, you know, shake your hand and tell you what a huge fan I am of what you guys do. And then I was like, if I really want to do this, what do I do? He gave me Jim Ross's information. I Tom Pritchard. I called both of them, rang their phones off the hook. Like almost a year went by where they would just tell me things like, because I would say, by this time, I learned of Killer Kowalski's school. You know, I started doing more research online. Now the internet's getting a little bit more prevalent, right? So I'm understanding now there are independent, there's such a thing as independent wrestling. There's independent wrestling schools and yada, yada, yada. So I was like, do I go to one of these, you know, Mr. Pritchard? And he's like, here's the thing. You do that, I'm going to have to unteach, you know, any type of, you know, incorrections or imperfections that you learn there. Any bad habits, I'm going to have to unteach you. He goes, I'd rather you be a 7-foot lump of clay kind of a thing, right? And I was like, okay, but like, I really want to do this, you know, kind of, when can we start? What do I do? And he then somehow I got a call from Kevin Kelly, who said they're doing something called Tough Enough on MTV. And so I was like, what do I do? He's like, make an audition tape. So I made an audition tape, sent it in, gave it to Kevin Kelly, right? And I got a call out of nowhere, still again working at Enterprise, and asked if I want to go out to if I can fly out to Las Vegas and audition in person. And, you know, there's no guarantees we can do anything for you kind of a thing. You get out there, you're going to have to earn it. You have to sell them. And so I went out there, and I did the best I could to sell them. I'm not going to lie. Like, there was guys bigger than me. There was a lot of guys bigger than me. And I was like almost 380 pounds at this point. I was humongous and fat, but nonetheless, I was, you know, big, tall, and I weighed a lot. And these guys just, there was like a bunch that dwarfed me. So like, I was nervous about that aspect, going, okay, well, I'm not the big guy here. I'm not the biggest person that they're going to see here, you know? So that's why I was just like, I'm just going to give them who I am and cross my fingers, you know?
Well, you definitely did really well in the early rounds of Tough Enough once you got down to the final people that were going to be in it. And then you got injured. And even with your injury, you ended up getting signed to developmental. What was that like, especially with what you're telling us of how hard you worked to put yourself in that position to be seen and to get on Tough Enough, and now you get injured, but somebody approaches you and offers you a deal. How did that all go down?
I got a call from Tom Pritchard saying, and Jim Ross saying that Kevin Dunn spoke really highly of me, that, you know, that I was, that, as Jim Ross would say, I could put sentences together. I'm an intelligent young man because I can put sentences together. but in the way Jim Ross would say it. And the humble part of it, you know what I mean? That you could tell I was a lifelong fan of this. It's something I really wanted to do. Obviously, I had the look. How's your knee? You know, that was the first thing they asked. I was like, it's fine. I believe I had to get it scoped and do a couple things with it and then rehab it, but I would be good to go. And they're like, well, we have a tryout over at what was called Heartland Championship Wrestling, I believe, in Ohio, Les Thatcher's. And that was a developmental territory for WWE at the time, there in OVW. There was two of them. And so I got sent there. And just I didn't know this at the time. I thought I still had to try out. I still had to earn my keep kind of a thing. And mind you, I don't know what I'm doing because at Tough Enough, all I learned was how to front bump, back bump, and lock up. I don't know anything else at this point. I can't even do anything about kick over. So I want to talk about nerves. At this camp, I was terrified. I didn't even know how to run the ropes. So I'd get there early before the tryout would start. And I'm at this tryout camp, guys. Listen to this. Rene Dupree, Travis Tomko, AJ Styles. Who else was there? I believe Samoa Joe was at this one. Bobby Roode was at the, there was like 20 guys that are in WWE right now, like between the last 5 years that are there, that were there with WWE in the last 5 years or TNA. And then you had me, you had all these guys with tons of experience. And then me, I was the only one with no experience. I had no clue what I was doing. And, they actually put me in a match and they put me in a match with AJ Styles. I'm like, dude, I've never wrestled AJ. And, you know, I'm sure deep down he's like, well, hell, you know, what am I going to do with this kid, you know? And he's like, just listen to me, and I'll try to do the best I can with you. Do not kill me. And and we went from there. He locked up with me. Next thing I know, he's throwing himself on the ground into the turnbuckle, making it look like I threw him. We did test the strength. I have no idea what I'm doing. I just know what I watched on television. So I'm mimicking what I you know? And it was probably god awful. But he let me literally pick him up and body slam him. No one taught me this at this point. I never knew this on Tough Enough because I got hurt before we learned that. Again, mimicking what I saw on TV. And we were able to pull off a match, somewhat of a match. And you know, afterwards, they were just saying, the scouts, whoever, they were just like saying, we wanted to see where you're at with your knee. And what can you do without, you know, being really trained kind of a thing. And in my head now, I'm going, well, Jesus Christmas, what could have happened to an AJ Styles or Daniel, you know, Bryan Danielson or these other guys that were there that you're letting me throw around? Do you know what I mean? They could have been killed.
Right.
Because I don't know what happened. But, it was like maybe the next week over the phone, Kevin Kelly called me and asked me if I could move to Louisville, Kentucky. And I was like, yeah. And with this time I was with Enterprise Car Sales now where, you know, it was still technically my first full year out of college. So at this point, like I was making like almost $90,000 a year. And that's your first year out of college back in 2001. That's really good money.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm just starting to put together and, you know, savings, me and my, you know, future wife at the time. She was just my, you know, we weren't married yet, but we were engaged living in Connecticut. And so this was a hell of a risk. You know, I came home master and she was, you definitely need to be doing this. You're cut out to do this. You've got to do this. We've got to chase this now while we can. And I was like, all right, you said it, you know. So we went to Louisville, we moved to Louisville, Kentucky. And, you know, that's how I basically started. We got signed.
So about how much of a reduction in your yearly salary was that for you to go from your enterprise job to OVW?
I comparatively to the other developmental talent, I can't complain because most of the guys are making $750. I made $1,500 a week.
Wow, that's really good.
Which is insane, and I deserve it. But I mean, screw that. That sounds so stupid saying that.
Do you know the reason why? Did you say you had to leave a job so you needed more, or was that just what was off?
No. There was just not. Are you kidding me? I'm not negotiating. I would have went for $5. I was just excited to be WWE, you know, not a superstar yet, but almost one, you know. So
yeah.
I would have went there at any cost, you know. But no. You don't negotiate a developmental contract. I don't know. You take what they give you. And I always thought everyone made like $1,000, you know. But there was some that made $750, some that made $1,000, and some that made, $15.
What year was this?
April 2002. So John Cena, Shelton Benjamin, Randy Orton, Brock, they were just being called up. Cena literally was called up the week I was there, but he was still down there working with us, you know, in all of our practices every day. So was Shelton and the rest of them all.
You eventually get called up a year after you arrive in OVW.
Yeah.
You're called up to the SmackDown brand without a lot of, you know, fanfare and without a lot of buildup or vignettes. You were immediately chosen with Nathan Jones to join a team, Survivor Series team, consisting of yourself and Nathan Jones, Brock Lesnar, Big Show, and A-Train. It's kind of a weird situation for you as a big guy to be thrown into with all those other big guys.
I mean, and I was ecstatic because it was a main event storyline. Anytime you do anything with Brock Lesnar, who was the champion, you know, me and Nathan were supposed to be his heaters, which is funny when you think about it, but therein lies the heat, right? Brock doesn't need a heater, right? So by having everybody would have to go through me and Nathan first to get to him was the gimmick.
But looking back at it, you know,
yeah, stupider than hell. Yeah, right. Bro. Like, yeah, 100%, you're 100% right. Putting me next to Big Show, oh my God, the dumbest thing ever. Yeah, of course.
Now, were they all cool to you? Like, you're a new guy, you're this tall. Was like Big Show looking you up and down, or Brock like maybe intimidated by another big guy coming in, or were they super cool working with you?
At first, super cool. Brock was always cool the entire time. Brock, I don't know if Danny Davis called him or something, but Brock pulled me to the side on my first TV. He's like, you need anything, you let me know. He goes, I had a squash match for Shannon Moore. And I remember him pulling me aside, and he goes, if any of these guys say anything to you other than you absolutely drive right through him, you come tell me, okay, and I'll fix it. And I was like, okay, thank you. You know, it's my first time really talking to him. I was like, thanks a lot. And you know, later on, I learned Danny Davis put a nice call in on my behalf to Brock. And so I had him really helping me as far as the office goes and politicking, believe it or not. And but once Brock left, first my partner Nathan Jones quit and stayed in Australia, literally as our fucking music was playing. Okay, I'm in my gear doing my push-ups, getting ready for, you know, right behind the curtain on a house show in Australia. Nathan is beelining for the exit door instead. And I'm like, dude, that's our music. Where are you going? Where's your gear? What the hell just happened? And I'm in the parking lot freezing my ass off doing this, yelling at him, let's go. We're going. No, you're coming back in there. I'm not even in my gear. I don't care. You're coming. Let's go. He's like, I can't do it anymore, mate. I cannot do it anymore. They fucked with him mentally, royally. And the locker room, the boys. Sure. And it just was too much for him. That and the travel.
And that was right when he actually left, right there?
Yes, there were no signs of this happening.
What did you? First, I want to ask, what did you end up doing for the match?
It was a 6-man. It's supposed to be me, Nathan, and Brock, but it ends up being me, Big Show, and Brock. I believe is what it was. Yeah, versus like Cena, Kurt, and Benoit.
So they just switched it up last minute.
Like last second, I think.
Was this a SmackDown or house show or?
SmackDown house show in Australia. You should see it made headlines because Nathan quit.
Well, how bad? What, like a guy that big? I mean, what is so bad that could drive him to leave? You know, a job with the WWE.
No, I got it worse than he did. You know, but I'm a former college athlete, so there's nothing these guys are gonna do to me. you know, that I haven't had 10 times worse as a freshman playing, you know, starting college football and basketball. Do you know what I mean? At a D1 level.
That's part of the territory.
You get taped to the goalpost, butt-ass naked. That's part of the deal. I never cared about that shit. And so, like, this was nothing. Their crap was sophomoric. Like, I never had any problem with it. And the ribbing is basically what I'm talking about. And never a physical rib or anything like that for me. And Nathan, same thing. They're not crazy. So I'm like, I never really understood it because I'm going, he would kill them. There's not one guy in that locker room. Nathan would not eat a lot in real life. Seriously, he's crazy and he's strong and knows what he's doing. Yeah, anyway, so I don't know.
As far as you being a D1 athlete and, you know, a college guy, and you've seen all this stuff, but as someone who worked in enterprise and someone who's had and even now has a very adult professional job, looking back on it, what do you think about that overall professionalism that took place from the top down that kind of had that system in place that could break a Nathan Jones?
Good question, because people, you know, people will label it bullying. They'll label, oh, JBL was a bully and Bob Holly was a bully. And to a degree, some of that may be true. I think it depends on what you can take and what you can't take. If you're a guy, like you said, coming out of nowhere, never played a sport in their life, and don't understand really what the end goal is, you know, of trying to make you one of the boys, right? That's their way of doing it. Or you can look at it the other way of going, well, wait a minute, this dude's on father time over here. I'm being pushed more than they are. They're jealous as fuck that I'm stealing their TV time. They're going to act like they're ribbing me when in real reality, it's a lot of, there's a lot of hating going on here. They're doing it on purpose because they're jealous little bitches and they're protected in their little WWE bubble world where they know no one's going to beat the shit out of them because no one wants to get fired over it. But if it was real, I'd put every single one of them through a fucking wall. You can look at it that way too. You know, so I really do get both sides of it. I swear to God, I do.
But it's not like anybody's shitting in your bag at Enterprise.
This is true. This is true. There's no real excuse for that. I'm more talking about like the JBL and Bob Holly stuff.
Right.
But like say Randy or somebody like doing stuff like that. I mean that happened on Raw, so I never got to see it. I just heard it. You know.
Yeah, it's definitely different now inside and out, you know, because it being a corporation.
Oh, my God, bro, it's a completely different animal. We'll get to this part of the story, but I almost went back. And when I did the visit, I couldn't be more impressed by that locker room. Like, it is night and day. And that's why we're seeing younger guys getting the shots they're getting right now. Because they're not coming back to a locker room full of haters, you know, going, oh, you know, this guy didn't shake my hand for the 55th time today. You know, today's WWE locker room, it's not like that. You don't have some veteran, you know, who's playing the, you know, playing off the facade of I'm grizzled vet, I'm locker room leader, I'm the policeman of this locker room, and I'm taking you to wrestler's court because you're getting a push and I'm jealous, but I'm going to pawn it off as you didn't shake my hand firm enough. There's none of that. That's not happening anymore.
Do you think at the time, I mean, looking back as an adult and a grown man and someone with some experience, that you kind of maybe look back and you kind of give a little bit of forgiveness to the Bob Hollies and JBL because maybe that's the atmosphere and how they were expected to behave?
That's how they were brought in, right? So I get that part of it, and I get that's how you weed out the weak from the strong, I suppose you could say, although I really do. I have a problem saying this because I see both sides of it. I'll give you an example. In a real fight, you know, I would eat them alive. So I don't know how you're considered tougher because you can take a rib versus let's just go in the parking lot and throw hands. I'll show you tough. You know what I mean? And yeah. You see what I'm saying by that? I don't understand how me taking a rib makes me tougher. That means I'm going to be able to last through a match with an injury. I'm going to wrestle on one leg once I break my knee by accident. And you know what I mean? Because that's what they'll always claim they do this for, to toughen the young guys up and to see weed the weak out, you know?
Okay. So you do this, you're brought up to SmackDown. You're doing this stuff with the other big guys that came to an end fairly short, right?
I got about a good 6 months. You know,
was it that long?
Yeah, it was. And then Brock, yeah, it was October, November, December, January, February, March. I got sent back down to OVW around spring.
And what was the reason, do you think, that it the first time didn't work out?
I remember on the internet, they kept, like, right, I don't know how, you know, the internet back then was very, very rarely correct, but they used to say stuff for, like, more seasoning and yada, yada, yada. But, like, I was learning at a much more rapid pace, wrestling on house shows every single night. But my point is, I was learning it on the fly on house shows with better talent than me, which makes you more confident. And so with that, going back down to OVW, that wasn't going to make me more improved, you know? So it wasn't because of more seasoning. I got sent down there because Brock straight up quit and went to the NFL, and they told me, we don't got nothing for you at the moment, so let's set you back down to OVW, and we'll bring you back up when we have something again. And I was like, fine.
What was going through your head at the time? Because we've talked to enough people when they say, you know, creative doesn't have enough for you, that is really bad news. What's going through your head when you're being sent back to OVW?
There's a little depression setting in here that I got to go back down. I'm not on TV anymore. That kind of ego type of thing, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, I had a lot given to me really early, right? So there's no question there was a little ego with that. So the ego part of me, you know, that I got a little depressed. But this was my opportunity because in OVW, I'd only been a babyface. I was this big white meat babyface for Jim Cornette and OVW. When I first got called up to SmackDown with Brock and them, I had no heel experience. I never wrestled as a heel in my life. I was only a babyface for like 8 months. And then they pulled me up to TV with 8 months of experience. So again, I was like, oh, you know what? Here's the glass half full part of the equation is, you know what? I get to work on being a heel and calling matches on the fly. That's what I'm going to concentrate on. So I'll make the most of it kind of a thing. But again, the ego part of me was like, well, shit, you're still not on SmackDown, though. And all these other guys, they're being called up and you're down in OVW again. So I turned to taking painkillers. And my entire time down there in OVW and for the next 4 years, for that matter, for 5 years, I became a functioning painkiller addict where I took 60 milligrams of hydro or oxycodones. That's, you know, Percocet, Lorsets, Lortabs. Right. And I would literally take 60 milligrams of any of those three every 4 hours around the clock. I never ran out. I never missed any doses within those 4 hour windows. I had like three or four different doctors writing prescriptions for 180 pills each month. So I never ran out. If I did, fans would give me some down in OVW, and it was bad. But the problem was I was functioning. So I was high functioning on it. So I didn't really know I had a problem at first. It took me about a year. And then I felt like I had to stay on them because it gave me, once you're an addict with those type of painkillers, it doesn't make you lethargic and tired like it should anybody else, okay? In my brain, the way it connects and the way it fires my brain receptors is it gives me a high. It gives me a cocaine high. It makes me gives me this ephedrine rush. And so that's how I got through my time at OVW after being sent back down. And then when I got called back up, I was like, well, I can't stop these now. I can't wrestle without these, I felt, because I did have this ephedrine rush from them. I finally ran out of my pills. On tour in Italy because I mistimed how much I was supposed to bring with me, and I never did that before. And sure enough, I did here in Italy. They added an extra day to the tour versus me coming home and getting my next, you know, prescription filled, and I ran out. So I went through withdrawal for the first time in my life. I was throwing up blood in my hotel room and bathroom. I was knocking on some of the other guys on the roster's door, and I could see their reaction. I could almost, like, see my reflection on these guys' faces of going, Jesus Christ, I'm that guy. Like, I'm that friggin' loser that's looking for drugs. Like, how embarrassing, you know? So called my wife from Italy and said, I'm coming home tomorrow. I don't know how I'm going to get out of here, but I'm going to get out of here. And the minute you pick me up at the airport, I'll give you the time, and once I get my flight booked, you got to find me the dingiest, shittiest rehab known to man because I need this shit scared out of me. I really need, I don't want to go to jail, obviously, but I need something bad to happen for me to break this. I know I do.
Was anybody in the organization aware of the struggle that you're going through?
No, because there was no struggle. I was, when I say functioning, it means you right. can't tell anything wrong with the person. I'm not louder. I'm not quieter. I'm not drooling on myself. Again, it's an upper for me.
What was the reason? Were you beat up? Or, like, what was the reason you started?
Oh, good question. Yeah. Okay. Back spasms. I blew out my L5 early on in my career. And so I can always show my x-rays, and there wasn't a doctor in America that wasn't going to go, Jesus, how are you wrestling on this? Here's some pills. That's not the doctors. That's me. That's me being the addict and figuring out how to work the system and scan the system so I can get my fix.
Well, one thing you said was that you thought that Vince would bring you up and give you something cool, and he gave you the stuttering gimmick. And I talked to Jillian Hall, and she said she was given the gimmick of that thing on her face the same day that Vince gave you that stuttering gimmick.
Oh, my God. She drove with me that morning, actually. Yeah, we were in Chicago. We got called up from OVW when they were in Chicago, and we were in my rental car, me and Jillian. And that's right. I forgot about her part of this. Yeah. And Johnny Hayes came up to me in the cafeteria and goes, hey, the big man's going to call into his office, and I think he's got something you're going to like, or maybe you're not going to like. My suggestion is just be open-minded. And I was like, okay, what the hell does that mean? So go in there.
Vince, what do you think? You're going to be like a male stripper? Like,
I have no clue what that means. None idea. I just didn't like, I had no idea what that meant. So I go in there, and again, Vince didn't come up with nobody's gimmicks. He came up, the last gimmick he came up with was what, Carlito and his apple. That's all, to my knowledge, he was doing at that point, as far as working one-on-one with wrestlers. You know what I mean? Everything else was creative, came up with the characters, not Vince McMahon himself. So when Vince comes up with a character for you, you fucking do it, you know, because whatever, how bad it is, he's going to push it to the moon.
Yeah.
And every promo so I come in there. Let me tell you a story. So I come in there. He's like, hey, I've got one. I've got a really good idea for you. He goes, I've had this for a few years. And I'll be honest, I had a couple big guys I wanted to put this on, but I just felt they weren't going to be confident enough on the microphone to do it. And he goes, let me put it to you this way. Have you ever walked into a nightclub and you see this gorgeous, blonde hair, blue-eyed, big booby babe just sitting there at the end of the bar? Just every guy is just drooling all over her. You ever see that type? I'm like, sure, yes. And he's like, and then you walk up to her and you introduce yourself, and then you're expecting this pretty cute little voice, and then all of a sudden you hear her say, hello. And he did this like super bassy deep voice. And I was like, Mr. McMahon, I swear to you, I've never seen that in my life. No, I've never seen a girl that's really hot have a man's voice. Nope. And he's like, well, you're not getting it. My point is, somebody that is so perfectly, and this point I'm not saying I was perfectly sculpted or muscular or whatever, but this was his analogy he was giving me. I'm this guy with all these physical attributes. I'm young, I'm tall, I'm strong, I'm good looking, all this other, I'm intelligent, I graduated college, magna cum laude, all this good stuff, right? But I need an Achilles heel, is what he kept saying. Your Achilles heel is, you're going to stutter. What? And he was like, you're going to stutter. You're going to have a speech impediment. And you're going to be very defensive over it, in fact. People are going to be minding their own business. And you're going to take them and you're going to take their face and you're going to mash it in their meal right in the middle of catering because you're assuming they're making fun of you, even though they're not. I'm like, okay. So I'm a bully. He's like, you're defensive over your speech disorder. I'm like, okay. How does this work? You know, and do I go down to OVW? I go, you know what, Mr. McMahon? I don't even want to go back down to OVW. I go, I'll make you a deal. If I can practice this the rest of this day, the rest of this night that I'm here, and I could bring it back to you by the end of the evening, no OVW, I get called up now to SmackDown or whatever show you guys want me on. He's like, well, it definitely will be a SmackDown spot. But yes. He goes, if you think you can do that, it's on you. I like the confidence, but so here I am. I'm in the men's bathroom mirror working on stuttering. I swear to God, you can't make it up. And I'm working on, like, how can I make this funny? How can I be intimidating? I'm trying to hit it at every angle because I don't know what the hell they want, what he wants with this. Right? So right. I figured out I'm going to start trying to get stuck on words And instead of saying the word I want to say, like a curse word, I'm going to replace it with something ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? So I'm going to be like, you know, John Cena, when I get to the ring tonight, I'm going to, and I'd replace the word fuck with something else.
Right. Did you tell anybody else? Like, was anyone else helping you practice, or were you keeping it to yourself?
I told a couple. No, I didn't let anybody see me practice. Hell no. But I did tell them they wanted me to. I forget who I told. I'm sure I told some OVW people that this is what they wanted at the time. I don't know if I did or not. That night, I just know I wanted to get back in there and do this for him. So I come back in after SmackDown's over, and Cena's in there. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. And he's like, well, you said you want to try it. Here, cut some promos on John. And John had, he's like, look, we need more guys on this roster right now. You need to be back up here. He goes, just let her rip. Don't be nervous. Just go. And so I cut promos on, I cut like three or four promos on John. But the very first one, I swear to you guys, I wish I remember what I said, but it was something where it was funny. And both of them were laughing their asses off and going, he's got it. Let's bring him back up. And John's like, he's good to go. Let's just bring him up now, kind of a thing. And so that next, I went back down to OVW. Why did I go back down? Oh, because I think I was their champion at the time. So I had to go back down there and drop a title to somebody in OVW. But while I was down there, like all the other guys, my friends down there, like, why are they having you stutter? What are they thinking? What the? This is stupid. I was like, look, I don't care. I don't want to be down here anymore. You know, and more importantly, Vince is behind this. So I'll do what the guy says. He says, jump. You say, how high, right? At least that's how we were trained to do. Be overly prepared to whatever they got for you. You know, so long story short, I get called up that following week. I debut against Zack Ryder, eat him alive in a squash match. He wasn't Zack Ryder yet. He was some scrawny kid, you know, from New York at the time. He was like 19. And
that was at Madison Square Garden, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then maybe he wrestled somebody else, right, Robbie?
Yeah, who'd you wrestle your second match?
I'd be like, maybe the next match or match after that, actually.
No, it was your second. I think first was Ryder, second was me.
You're right.
Isn't that weird looking back now how so many people compare me and Zack Ryder, and your first match was Zack Ryder, second Rob Echoes? That's so weird.
That's crazy. And you, here's Robbie E, who's there to be enhancement talent with freaking earrings and chewing gum.
And blonde highlights.
But you say what you want, you look like enhancement talent. You look like a star. So it is what it is. That was good.
You were, like how you said you are, typical Matt, you get overexcited. I remember you actually told me, we obviously didn't know each other. You said, hey, man, if this goes good, I'll take you out to dinner afterwards.
Oh, that was my big thing. Every enhancement talent match, like even Shannon Moore. When my first run through SmackDown, I did the same thing. Yeah. Because I always had this thing like these guys are probably terrified I'm going to injure them. I'm going to kill them. They're not getting much money from this match. And I could, you know what I mean? And they're doing a lot to help me. That's what they're doing here. You guys,
and I remember your whole family was there in the audience. It was Sovereign Bank Arena when you wrestled me and Trenton. I remember you said your whole family was there.
Were we in Jersey?
We were in Jersey, yeah, Trenton.
Yep, that's where my family all lives. Yeah. Oh my God, you're right. So what did I say with the stuttering thing? So every promo I did, Vince would be behind the camera. You know what I mean? So again, maybe some of the guys like Kurt on the roster were like, dude, what are they doing? This is stupid. So then I was like, okay, maybe it wasn't a good idea. Maybe I should have spoke up. But again, I'm so young. I'm still less than 2 years in total, you know, total time in the business, 2 or 3 years or so. I don't know enough to say no to him. Are you crazy? He did give me an opportunity to say, look, if you're not confident, Mr. McMahon saying, if you're not confident enough with this, if you don't think you can do this, we'll figure something else out for you. Look, I did not want to go back down to OVW.
And that also could be a setup too. Like if you don't, you know, if you don't want to do it, it'll be fine. And then you don't do it, and then fuck Matt Morgan, right?
That's a good call.
Exactly. Like who do you really want to tell Vince McMahon you're not confident?
Yeah, exactly. I'd get killed for that. Yeah, you're probably right.
But looking back on it, that stuttering gimmick was death, right?
Oh my God. Well, yeah. That's not my. Oh, I'll tell you this to show you that it was not a rib. Vince wanted to put this on Brock Lesnar.
Oh my God, what?
I shit you not, guys. I swear on everything. He's always wanted to put it on like a big, impressive, you know, jacked up dude. But think about it. Every big, impressive, jacked up dude is not confident on the microphone when they first come up. I've always been confident. Whether I could cut a promo or not, I've always been very confident with a microphone. And I'm telling you right now, yes, I shit you guys not, he did say that he wanted to put it on Brock. Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
Did you fucking imagine he'd be like the next big stutterer?
So how long did it actually end up lasting?
Probably like after your match. No, not too back far after your match. I want to say 3 months tops.
Right, and I've never really heard a satisfactory answer to this. If you debut as the stuttering Matt Morgan in April 2005, you're released in July 2005. You're this big jacked up guy who's 6'11". You've got charisma. You work hard. You're motivated. You've shown that you'll do what they ask you. What possibly went wrong with WWE that you never went back after 2005?
I was bitter. At first, I wasn't. At first, they set me up to go to New Japan, and what was said was, look, we got to get the stuttering character didn't work. We got to get you off TV, off of American TV. We're going to send you to Japan in a year, bring you back. We'll do something new with you. But we've got to get this, you know, off of you, basically. You know, reading between the lines, we got to get this stupid stuttering stank off of you. You know, and bring you back with something new. But it's going to take some time. It'll take a year, and we'll bring you back. Like they used, what was his name, Kane, when he was the dentist. To get that off of him, they sent him back down to Smoky Mountain, you know, wrestling or whatever. He was a Unabomb and came back in as Kane, whatever the hell it was.
What was their reason that it didn't work, though? Because they said it just didn't come out the way they thought it would?
I'll be very honest. I don't think it was that it didn't work. I think I got buried by Big Show at every turn. He acted like he was my boy at first. And then, like I'd be on his bus with him. We'd have a beer after our stuff. Because I did a lot of stuff with him when I came back up as the stuttering Matt Morgan. Like, I would go through enhancement talent, but then I would be built up to work against... I'd be Carlito's bodyguard, okay? And then I would have five Big Show, like, every other week. And there was going to be, like, a slow build for my character, getting bigger matches and eventually breaking away. Well, Carlito gets drafted to Raw out of nowhere, and I don't. And I think they literally didn't know what to do. But because I'm high on painkillers, I didn't even care. I was like, okay, well, I did what you guys told me to do. So what's next? He's like, we'll send you to Japan about a year and bring you back. I'm like, cool. Jim Cornette, when I started up with TNA Wrestling, gave me a call. At this point, I am now trying to get sober. This thing in Italy happens where I ran out of my painkillers. I went through withdrawal. Got flown home. I flew myself home, made up an excuse why I had to leave the tour early, didn't tell them why, but I ended up putting myself to rehab for 2 weeks. Get a call from Jim Cornette. He says, hey, want to give you an opportunity with TNA Wrestling. I think I can get you a job there. What do you think? And at this point, now I'm sober. I'm thinking with a clean mind, and I'm going, you know what? You know, I did exactly what WWE told me to do. And they take this risk and send me to Japan and keep me away from my family, not family, but my wife, the States, you know what I mean? I'm having to live in Japan, you know, for like a year and change.
So you're like, fuck WWE.
So I was bitter. Yeah. I was like, you know
Wait,
what?
You full on lived in Japan?
Pretty much. I was there 3 weeks on, 4 days, 5 days off.
Wow.
I mean, because I didn't wrestle with New Japan. I wrestled All Japan, New Japan, and also I was making a lot of money. I did good there. I didn't want to be there, though.
But as far as the Big Show thing, you said Big Show buried you. Like, what did that look like? What did you hear? Why do you think that?
He never did it in front of me. I mean, I thought we were friends. I thought he was obviously he was somebody I looked up to. You know what I mean? I thought he was someone that was taking me under his wing. And a lot of the guys were telling me behind my back, he would tell Vince I'm not safe. You know, and that I'm going to injure him one of these times with one of those F5s. And there was times he would try to sandbag me and embarrass me, but I'd still hoss his ass up and do it the best I could. You know, dumb things like that. And maybe the guys are just gassing me up, and that could be the truth, too. So if that's not the truth, I apologize. And maybe Big Show didn't bury me, but I'm just telling you what I was told.
If you were Big Show and you saw Matt Morgan coming down the pike, wouldn't you think maybe your position in the company was threatened?
Hell no, because I am a giant, and Matt Morgan is 6'11", and is athletic. He's a good-looking kid. He's in shape, but he's a good listener, and I can make money with him. And P.S., I'm a legitimate giant. I've got huge hands. I've got huge feet. I am a, you know what I mean? Big Show looks like a giant. I don't look like a giant. I would not have been intimidated if I was him. I would say, holy shit, how do I make money with this kid?
Looking back on it, is that what you think what was going on?
I do know Vince did say it to me one time that I got to be more careful with him. So I do know there was truth to him saying I was unsafe, at least one time. But I don't know if it was a continual thing like a lot of the guys were telling me.
And when Jim Cornette called you, was that a relationship you'd cultivated in Ohio Valley Wrestling? And were you, after saying, you know, I don't really owe WWE anything, you felt pretty good about going to TNA, right?
Yes, I was at this point. Now I'm sober. That's the most important thing here. I'm sober and I'm clean. So now with a clear mind, I'm going, you know what? Fuck them. I'm going to shove this up WWE's ass fucking sideways. And I'm gonna be the blueprint, like I should have been from day one with that company, which I was in OVW. You know, they had, pardon the pun, they had the blueprint on how to book me properly. They chose not to. So you know what? I'm gonna go to another company that's on TV at the time, and I'm gonna prove them wrong, and they're gonna call me.
Were you familiar with TNA?
No, I'd watch it on Fox, and I'd take, even when I was with WWE, we would meet Nova and others. We would watch the $9.99 pay-per-view, I believe, every Wednesday night.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're a wrestling fan. You watch every wrestling, right? So the best part about how I was going to be brought into TNA was I wasn't going to have much pressure on me. I was going to be brought in as Cornette's bodyguard. So for my first 6 months, while I'm still getting sober, keep in mind, I have this luxurious gimmick, if you will, perfect timing for someone getting sober. You see what I mean? So I had no reason to go take painkillers if I got hurt because I wasn't going to get hurt. I wasn't wrestling. I would be Jim Cornette's bodyguard. Then we just started using the blueprint. You know, if God made the blueprint of the perfect giant, you're fucking looking at him.
What is the blueprint? Am I dumb? What does the blueprint actually mean? I never even knew what is it?
If God had the blueprint of the perfect athlete, you're looking at him.
Did you know that, Matt?
Do you know what a blueprint is, Robbie?
I don't. It sounds like something a builder. Does a builder like draw that when he draws a building? And then he
yes, it's a schematic. It's a schematic, but schematic's not as cool. Doesn't sound as good.
Yeah, it's basically a drawing that used to be blue of a design of a building. So it's like Matt Morgan was designed to be the best wrestler alive.
Got it. What are those people called that do those buildings again?
Architects.
Yes, there you go. I knew that. I got it now. I get it.
Hey, Matt Morgan, would you believe it if I told you that Robbie asked D'Lo Brown what a CPA was?
Jesus Christmas. Come on, man.
Okay, this was right around the time when you started with TNA. Was right around the time we worked for Bernard, wasn't it, Matt?
Bernard! Oh, my God.
Yes. We worked for a dude... Matt Kuhn, me and Matt Morgan worked for a guy and many others did where he would film these matches in a warehouse and not like where you wore anything inappropriate, normal wrestling gear, normal wrestling matches and everything.
You guys up to that, by the way. I had no clue what that was till you guys told it to me while we were there, by the way.
You do these matches and there's no audience. They're not for anything. It's basically for the guy just to watch him you can leave that to your imagination. We don't really know what he ever did with them. But again, it was normal wrestling.
Tell him what you told me.
Well, I mean, you could take a guess what you think he did with them. But Matt is in the car. Matt has no clue to this. And he's in the front seat with this dude. And he's like saying right to him, like, hey, so I don't get it. There's no audience. And he just goes, this sounds kind of fucking weird. We're wrestling in front of no audience. What do you do with these? And he's like asking him all these questions, making the guy who, I don't know what the dude's deal is, feel very uncomfortable. And it was pretty entertaining to experience.
I didn't know. You guys, like you, God. I think Sonny Siaki and a couple others told me like later. Oh, God. Like, oh boy.
Okay. At some point, you know, Hulk Hogan and Bischoff come in, and that was kind of a big thing for you. What was the influence of Eric Bischoff and especially Hulk Hogan on your career in TNA?
Eric, nothing really. Hulk, definitely. I met Hulk on American Gladiators, a set of American Gladiators. I still think, and I love him to death, but I had a better run before Hulk came.
In one sense, you know, a lot of people think of you, maybe you were Hogan's guy. But at the other sense, Bischoff and Hogan come in. In come the Nasty Boys. In come Ric Flair. In comes Jeff Hardy. In comes all these different people, which at the time you were at the top. And even though Hogan's kind of on your side, you're being kind of marginalized a little bit, right?
I got time off of TV. And Eric was just like, we'll bring you back and we got to make you like our Undertaker. Not the same character, but when you wrestle, it needs to be special. He agreed. So I take time off. And then we started doing this stupid gimmick where I would just show up like we lied and said I quit TNA. And we worked the internet the best we could. Everyone thought I had left TNA and I was going to be going back to WWE. But I was still under contract with TNA this whole time. And we took about 2 months, 3 months off. And I started showing up on house shows randomly. And I'd hop the guardrail and jump whoever was in the match. And then I would leave on his phone. And we would have that sent in to all the different wrestling websites to make this look real. A lot of people thought this was real as far as I really did quit TNA. But obviously, once I started jumping guardrails, people were smartened up, obviously. But
I was on the receiving end of a few of those house show beatings.
Yes, Rob, yeah, exactly. So you remember. So what was I going to say was, so we do all this. The internet's worked. Everybody, kind of thinks this is kind of cool. This is different. And I come back, and they put me in this tag team with Joey. It made no sense. It didn't make any sense. And it was because, in my opinion, I just wasn't Eric's guy. He didn't hate me. But he was one who was really running creative at the time. No lie, he didn't say he wasn't. Anytime you ask him about, you know, TNA, he always backs away and says that he wasn't, you know, I wasn't part of the creative at this point or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you were. The creative passed, their show passed through Eric at the very end of the line every week.
Well, when did you come back with, that robe and, the...
That's when. So they pair me with Joey. And I tell Hulk, I'm like, Hulk, this is what this was supposed to be. But they put me in a tag team out of nowhere, and it's just to get me back on TV. And I don't get what the hell was the point of me taking time off if I'm supposed to be brought back and made to be special, and this isn't special. And he's like, I agree, brother. He's like, well, let me think of something. And he was doing his grand opening at his Hogan's Beach Shop, and they put that on TV. And he's like, can you get over here? I'm like, where? He told me where his beach shop was in Clearwater Beach. And so I drove an hour and a half down there. TNA had their cameras there. And Hogan's just like, dude, we're going to force them into something. You're going to start to beef with me. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I was excited. And he had me snatch his robe off the memorabilia wall and just continue to bully him. And then and he would cower down. And every week I would just bully him. And Joey would just kind of be with me as well, right? It didn't really make sense, you know? And Joey...
Yeah, that is weird. You're doing this big thing with Hogan and he's just kind of there. Yeah, that is weird.
Joey's fucking good. So sure. And he was charismatic as hell. And he was doing something that caught fire, I thought, too, with his own thing. So, listen, there was plenty of gimmick to go around. He could have been doing his own thing by himself because he did great with that. You know, shooting on that reality show TNA was trying to do, right? And being an 87% or whatever the hell it was called, right? People were into that. So Joey didn't need to be tagged with me, and I needed to be tagged with him. We were both fine just by ourselves, you know? But that I blame Eric. That was Eric and the creative team. That even though Hulk would say we need to do something with him better, bigger than what we're doing, and they'd all say, yes, we agree, Hulk. But then the next week, that wasn't written that way. It'd be written, me and Joey were in a tag match. And Hulk would continue to try to put his thumb on it, you know, and say, you know, well, Morgan's going over and he needs to cut a promo on me. And then that's why you would see, the stuff out of the blue where I'm just, shooting on Hulk Hogan on the microphone when Joey's in an angle with Rob Van Dam. You know, it was weird.
It was definitely a disconnect. And there's a disconnect to me, too, because I haven't heard that a lot. According to everything I've heard, when Hogan was in TNA... It was like he called the shots, but to me it sounds like you're saying he didn't really have any power in TNA.
He did, and because he wasn't privy to creative meetings. He wasn't in there. He's Hulk Hogan. He's not going to creative fucking meetings all week long in dude ranches. Are you kidding me? So these guys would spend all week writing their show and bonding with one another at some dude ranch somewhere. And Book and me with stupid tag matches. Hulk, we'd get the TV, the day of TV. Hulk was like, well, this is stupid. And he'd go back in there. He'd actually then go into the production, the TV production room, where everybody would sit around this round table, and they would talk through. They'd have, like, Mike Tenay call the show out verbally as to what's going to happen in each segment, and they would go over the times and explain it to the agents, and the agents would come out and tell us what we're doing later on that afternoon once we arrive. Hulk would be in those, part of those meetings. He would be in those production meetings. And that's when he would go to bat for me and go, well, this is stupid. You know, you have him in this tag match. It doesn't make sense. You know what? Morgan needs to win. He needs to put his foot across the dude's chest for 1, 2, 3. You know, it would be something like that. So he would get his way. But what I didn't understand would be, okay, guys, wake up. He's telling you week after week after week, you need to do something more with me. And they would continue writing me this stupid tag team stuff. And I'm like, how stupid can you be? He's going to keep changing this, you guys. You know what I mean?
And how? Who else was around that table besides Bischoff? And I'm just guessing here, Jason Hervey. And who else was in creative?
Russo was still there, I believe. I'm almost positive.
I mean, it changed by, I was there then, it changed by every few weeks, didn't it?
Yeah. Bruce was there for a while. Al Snow, Tommy Dreamer, Bubba.
Matt Conway, Dave Lagana.
Yeah, those two were a constant in there. So it would be a full staff. Keith Mitchell, Dave Zahadi. Everybody, some of the referees, maybe
Pat Kenny, Simon Diamond.
Yep, and the wrestling agents, yeah.
And so then, when Hulk Hogan maybe verbalizes that I know this might not be interesting to you or Robbie, but as a fan, which is all I am, it's interesting to me. When Hogan says, "Wait a second," do people start scribbling and rewriting stuff? Is that what goes on?
Yeah. I don't necessarily think somebody went and like would rewrite it. What would happen is they'd come up to me and say, well, here's what you were doing. Just want to let you know your boy said something on your behalf. He thinks highly of you. And then they'd be like, Bubba or Tommy would tell me this because they were in there. And they'd be like, so this is what you're doing. This is what you were going to be doing. Here's what you're now doing.
And what do you think you should have been doing?
Being that I took a hell of a risk for that company, taking 3 months off from earning more money than I made not working there for 3 months, a hell of a lot more, especially where Kurt, Steiner, Nash, Sting, everyone in that main event mafia took an entire year to put me over one by one, okay, each passing month until me and Kurt, and I'll never, there's not many matches, I'll say, okay, we stole the show just because I'm limited. I'm as good as a big guy's gonna get. You know what I mean? I'm not some 5-star match wrestler. I know that. But me versus Kurt at Bound for Glory 08 killed that show. We friggin' destroyed that place in California. And you're at the pinnacle at that point. Win or lose, I just got made. And Vince, I love Vince Russo, but this is his fault. He did not get me to that finish line. And that's on him. Meaning that finish line, what was my next angle? That's when they put me with Hernandez. That should not have happened. I should have been getting pushed to finally going over and winning the championship. That was the only thing left for me to accomplish. You see what I'm saying? And that's the trajectory I was on. I just went through your entire Hall of Fame list of main event mafia members. Do you know what I mean? You don't put me with a tag team with Sean Hernandez.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Hernandez looks like a monster unless he's standing next to you.
Exactly, and and Sean was doing really good at the time, too. They were really high on him, too. So this is what they would do. They were high on two guys. They put them together. They did it with me and Crimson, too.
So through all this time in TNA and everything, at some point you were talking to WWE again, right?
Yes.
And why didn't it end up working out?
Okay, that's a great question, because that's where Matt, you originally asked me this. Sorry. Around that main event mafia storyline in 08... Yes. I didn't want to go, though. I said, I'm loyal to those who are being loyal to me. And at that time, Dixie Carter was incredibly loyal to me. I was making a great paycheck, able to take care of my family, purchase my first home. You know what I mean? A lot of good things was happening for me and my family. And we were also trying to have our first child at this time. And so she did a lot of cool things for me. Me and my wife struggled. We were told we couldn't have kids. We tried for 11 years. Dixie had a similar problem. And she flew me and my wife to Nashville to see her doctor that helped them. I mean, she did a lot of cool shit like that, man. And I just felt very loyal to her because of that. You know, in retrospect, business decision-wise, maybe I wasn't the smartest, but I didn't care. This company was being loyal to me. So I didn't go nowhere. I resigned with TNA for like 3 years, and then it came up for another opportunity. And at that time, I took it. And so my wife is pregnant. I leave TNA, and I was supposed to debut Royal Rumble 2014, end of January. Well, January 7th, my son Jackson was born. And I don't know how to, Robbie or Dad, you should know this. The minute that kid was born, I didn't even hold him yet. Okay, the minute he was born, he wasn't breathing for like something like 10 seconds. And as emergency C-section, I don't know how to explain this other than this switch went off in my head that I'm done. I can never be away from this kid. Like, I'm not spending one night away from this little kid ever again. Like, that's not gonna happen. It took us 14 years now to have this kid. I'm blessed with this miracle, and I'm gonna go on the road 4 to 5 days a week? No.
Now, had you already signed a contract or anything?
No, I was gonna be doing it right then, once, because if I signed a contract, it would have been leaked that I was back. So this was gonna be, you know, they do a surprise Royal Rumble entrance. So it was like January 20-something I was supposed to be back at the Royal Rumble.
When you're having talks with WWE, you negotiate a contract, you negotiate this secret, you know, debut at Royal Rumble. How did that call go when you called them and you said, listen, guys, I don't think I can do this?
I actually called both companies. I felt I should call TNA as well and thank them for, you know, the years of being good to me. But then I called them after, obviously, but I called WWE immediately. And, you know, I told them my son, I just watched my son be born. And, you know, thank you for the opportunity, guys. I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm done. I don't want to, like what I just told you, I literally said, I don't want to spend one night away from this little boy. I don't know how to explain it to you. I feel horrible saying it to you, but the same token, this is not even a, you know, this isn't even a decision for me. Like, there's a switch, just very solid switch just went off. My thinking completely changed on my life.
And you decided you just wanted to be a father for your son.
I had no question. Yeah. Yes. And I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do it. And I'm going to be home around him nonstop.
Doesn't that give you just a level of satisfaction that a lot of wrestlers can't have, where you decided to walk away? The business didn't leave you. You left the business.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm being jaded wrestler. Yeah. But this wasn't jaded. Like, I don't know. This wasn't jaded wrestler who had some like better job waiting. This was, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I didn't even think about how I'm going to do this. I just knew whatever it was, I'll make it work. I'll make it happen. I'll figure out what I'm going to do for work. But I just know now there's no way I'm going anywhere.
So you don't look back at all and say, man, I wish I would have done that one last run with WWE.
I swear to Christ. No, not at all.
So, Matt, of course, making a choice to leave the wrestling business, and Glenn Jacobs, Kane has gotten a lot of press lately for having an elected position, but don't you hold an elected position?
I do, and first, but his position's bigger. If he wins, he's still got to go win his election. In the primaries, to be a Republican candidate, to be the mayor, you know, of Knox County. That's Knoxville, Tennessee. That's a huge bit of territory to be the mayor of if he wins that election in 2020. So long story short, me, I've already done all that part. I became commissioner in Longwood, right, my city here in Florida, November 7th of 2017. So one of my goals was, why isn't nobody doing anything? Our kids are going to grow up and go to the schools here, and they're going to go somewhere else and contribute to a different city. What can I do to change that? You know? So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stop talking shit. I'm going to throw my name in the hat and see what happens. So I went and I ran a very grassroots campaign.
So what is your the exact title that you are?
City commissioner.
And that is the same as a mayor?
The same responsibilities, honestly. But in our city, the commissioners elect the mayor.
Of course, Robbie, you know the best part about being commissioner, right?
I don't get it.
You get the bat phone.
Well, I was actually thinking all this commissioner and mayor talk and everybody wrestling running for stuff. What do you think if I went ahead and ran for the mayor in the town I live in?
You better have a good platform and know what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, I think I think I could make it work, you know?
So if you want to live in a great city, you can visit Longwood, Florida. And Matt, if you want people to get a hold of you or see what you're up to, how can people get a hold of you these days?
What I'm doing in politics... definitely you can check me out on, it's all politics and a little, and about my son as well. On my Facebook page is Matt Morgan for Longwood, Matt Morgan for Longwood on Facebook. And then Instagram and Twitter, Twitter's a little bit mishmash of both of me doing, I also do, men's physiques competitions twice a year. So like I do a lot of stuff with different, you know, muscle magazines and mainly, bodybuilding websites. And supplement companies. I'm sponsored by a company called Redcon One. So like I'll do a lot of advertising for them, some training sessions on their behalf, things like that. And that's on Twitter, but mainly Instagram. Instagram's where you can mostly find me. And that's at BP, like the gas station, at BP Matt Morgan. What else?
And on Twitter, that's your same handle too, right?
Sorry, on Twitter, same handle, at BP Matt Morgan, yeah. But Commissioner Morgan, you can see that stuff on Facebook. Other stuff is on mainly Instagram. I use it for, especially my son, Jackson. I put his T-ball game on every single week on my Instagram stories. And again, my son's autistic. He's nonverbal. And he's 4 years old playing in a league with 12-year-olds. And he's killing it. It's so impressive. And it's awesome. Like every week, it's like something big. He's hitting. So he's making some huge leap and bound.
Very cool, man.
That's amazing, dude.
Hey, so would you take any bookings for anything right now? Shows, seminars, signings?
No, I can't. I'm dying.
Got it.
Wow, that's amazing because I think you're the first person we've ever had that said that. And Robbie, what a great story it is with Matt Morgan, someone that it ended for. He's okay with it, and he's not really looking to come back, huh?
Yeah, well, Matt, you're the man. We appreciate you being on, and it was great chatting with you, bro.
Well, Robbie, I've heard a lot about him, but that was definitely Matt Morgan. What did you think about all the stuff he had to say?
You know, I think he is going to be he's definitely our first, and he's probably going to be our only guest ever who, when you say, hey, will you take any money for shows, seminars, or signings? His answer is no. So that was kind of surprising.
As someone in the prime of your wrestling career that's making a good living out on the indies, is that something that's almost a weird thing for you to hear when he's like, no, I'm good?
Well, it was weird hearing him say, hey, man, you know, I've worked all these years and, you know, WWE's finally going to bring me back. I'm going to be a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble in Pittsburgh. This is going to be a big deal. And just, nah, I don't want it anymore. But you know what, man? I will say that my life has changed since having kids. And it's awesome. All that matters in life is being in a happy place. And he is. And I think about that sometimes, too, because at one point my travel schedule was pretty crazy. And I think about if it ever did go back to that. And I still travel a lot. But I say if I was on the road 3-4 days a week, it would be hard, man, especially these early years. I hate when I'm just away for a day or two and I miss things that they do, a word they say or a different thing they do. It's hard.
And, you know, ironically, I definitely would not be involved in wrestling podcasts if I didn't have a 15-year-old son who was into wrestling and kind of kept my interest going. So fatherhood changes us all, doesn't it, Robbie?
Oh, it does for sure, especially when you have two of them. I have baby twins. We never really talk about my twins, Cash and Carter, on the show. You know, you're such a bad uncle, Matt Coon. You never even ask how my kids are doing.
How are Cash and Carter? Is that country music reference? Is that how you got the name?
Kind of, yeah. That's how we got it. It sounded cool. But, yeah, Cash and Carter, and then I have, of course, my 5-pound Chihuahua Prancer, who you never ask about either. You're just a terrible human. You don't really want me to run for mayor of my town, do you?
No, I really want you to, because then you can ask such illuminating questions as what a CPA is and what is a blueprint.
Hey, at least I'll make a connection with the people of being real.
That's very true. And if you want to make a connection with us, like we've tried to make with you, you can reach out to us on Twitter at Why It Ended. And we also have our YouTube channel. All you got to do is go to whereitended.com and you go right to our YouTube channel. Isn't that right, Robbie?
Yep. And then don't forget about Instagram is also at Why It Ended. And now, finally, Matt, our pro wrestling tee store is good to go, isn't it?
So, yes, we do. We got a couple great designs and we're putting up new designs every day. So pick yourself up a Muhammad Hassan inspired shirt or a Silky Chocolatey Voice inspired shirt. And guess what the URL is? ProWrestlingTees.com/WhyItEnded. And if you pick up one of our hilarious shirts, and believe me, we're definitely getting a computer shirt and we're definitely getting a shirt probably for every episode, go ahead and take a picture, tag us, and we guarantee we will retweet and follow you from the Why It Ended Twitter or Instagram. You know what, Robbie? I notice all the good-looking people like Instagram. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, that's why you didn't really have one and I had to beg you to get one.
Yeah, it has everything to do with that. So, Robbie, as I said before, wrestler in his prime, book this man. If you want to have Robbie E. Russell for you, he's a busy guy. What you got coming up this weekend?
This weekend, so Friday, May 11th, I will be wrestling for Warrior Wrestling in Chicago, Illinois. It's a stacked card. Definitely check that out. The 12th, Saturday, I'll be in Belgium, Wisconsin, teaching a seminar and doing a show for MEPW. And then the 13th, I will be for Pro Wrestling King in Bourbon, Indiana. Same thing, teaching in a seminar in the afternoon, followed by a show. And that's on Mother's Day. It's a busy 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you want to book me for a future show, signing, seminar, anything, RobbieEBookings@gmail.com. And if you would like to book me and Matt Kuhn for one of your shows to do some kind of live podcast or a live version of Why It Ended, definitely give an email to WhyItEndedMail@gmail.com.
And we got some announcements and some live shows and some other stuff coming up pretty soon. So go ahead and stay on that old Twitter machine if you would. And for Robbie E., I'm Matt Kuhn. Tune in next week for Why It Ended.